Despite export deal, further delays in China's rare earth shipments could trigger renewed trade clash. Washington and Beijing, on June 26, appeared to have finalized a deal meant to unblock rare earth exports from China, more than 6 weeks after China first made the offer. President Donald Trump said Thursday that the agreement was signed. Hours later, on Friday, China's Commerce Ministry issued a statement pledging to review and approve applications for the export of eligible controlled items in accordance with the law. During mid-May talks in Geneva, Beijing linked the resumption of rare earth exports to Washington, cutting the incremental tariff rate on Chinese goods entering the United States from 145% to 30%. Yet 6 weeks passed, and after follow-up talks in London on June 9 to 10, with no deliveries. If China follows through this time, it could remove a growing irritant in the trade negotiations and relieve pressure on U.S. manufacturers already scrambling for rare earth supplies. Analysts say the delay shows how a monopoly built over five decades now lets Beijing wield rare earths as a powerful bargaining chip in wider trade talks, a weapon that could further escalate the already simmering tensions with Washington. Has been exported from China since that discussion between the two countries, said Mark Smith, a 30-year industry veteran and chief executive of U.S. Minor Neocorp Developments. Speaking to the Epoch Times on June 23 before another round of closed-door meetings in Washington, he warned the situation could get very serious, very quickly. "We're talking about shutting down automobile production lines and defense contractor production lines," Smith said. "The strain is already showing. Multiple automakers have reported supply chain disruptions. In May, Ford halted Explorer production at its Chicago plant for a week because it could not secure enough rare earth magnets." Asked on June 26 about the shortage, the company told the Epoch Times it is encouraged by progress with talks between the administration and China and will continue to work with the president and his team on what's best for the auto industry. Inside Washington, Smith said, the rare earth crunch now ranks as the number one priority, drawing in the Departments of State, Commerce, Interior, and Defense, some of which contact him almost daily. The Epoch Times has asked those departments for comment. Department of Interior replied on July 27 that resolving heavy rare earth supply constraints is a current priority and said it is working with multiple departments in a whole-of-government approach to shore up critical mineral supply chains. According to Smith, the administration has brought in industry experts like him to explore possible remedies and strategies on the issue, while Smith's Neocorp is pursuing federal financing for its fully permitted Nebraska mine, which, if built, could help supply some heavy rare earths. The bottleneck began on April 4, when the Chinese Communist Party issued new export control rules requiring special permits for magnets and seven heavy rare earth elements that it monopolizes: samarium, gadolinium, terbium, dysprosium, lutetium, scandium, and yttrium. The controls cover every form of those elements: oxides, metals, alloys, mixtures, and finished magnets vital to electric vehicle motors, wind turbine generators, industrial robots, precision-guided missiles, and more. China currently supplies essentially 100% of these seven heavy rare earths in the world, Smith noted. In response to reports that Beijing has issued some licenses to some U.S. companies, Smith said many are under military review, meaning anything deemed dual use, can be used for both commercial and military purposes, won't get approved. He also cautioned that even license approvals offer no guarantee of delivery. They have not exported any of the minerals yet, really going slow on this process. Smith said what he saw aligns with reports that applications have been stalled or are denied outright when companies refuse to disclose sensitive intellectual property or details of commercial arrangements, forcing them to restart a 45-day review. China already produces well over 90% of the world's rare earth permanent magnets, and every high-temperature version needs just a little bit of dysprosium or terbium that only Beijing supplies, Smith said. To seal the squeeze, Chinese officials have told at least two U.S. partners, South Korea and Switzerland, not to reroute any oxides, metals, or magnets to American firms, Smith said, according to his industry contacts. On May 12, the Chinese Ministry of Commerce announced a multi-agency crackdown on strategic mineral smuggling, following a May 9 stepped-up enforcement meeting in Shenzhen. Historically, Smith said, rampant smuggling muted price spikes whenever China tightened supply. But this time, they have military people and regulators at the docks actually inspecting the cargo, not just the paperwork. Sources inside China, he added, describe the toughest enforcement in decades because Beijing wants the rare earth card firmly in hand as negotiations continue. Weaponized negotiation. On paper, China's new export license rules cover every nation, yet Smith believes the real target is the United States. By threatening any ally that might act as a middleman, Beijing keeps the pressure squarely on Washington. U.S.-based economist Davy J. Wong calls the move a classic CCP-style weaponized negotiation. He warned that Beijing's maneuver could further escalate the already simmering tensions with Washington. Other countries have felt the pinch, but China has used the universal nature of the rules as justification for not fully honoring trade agreements with the United States, Wong told the Epoch Times. The pattern began in mid-May in Geneva. Beijing offered to resume rare earth exports if Washington slashed its average tariff on Chinese goods. Washington agreed. When shipments failed to appear, the White House moved to bar Chinese graduate students from sensitive fields and told U.S. chip design software makers to cut off Chinese customers. The same leverage surfaced in early June talks in London. Once again, Beijing promised rare earth shipments if the United States restored student visas and rolled back new chip restrictions. Both sides kept piling on demands and bargaining them away, so the final London framework ended up as little more than a pledge to carry out unresolved parts of the Geneva deal, Wong said. The U.S. gambit has extracted only short-term promises, he added. Even those promises, Wong noted, amount only to a six-month reprieve, referencing a Wall Street Journal report. Each permit under China's new license regime is valid for only 6 months, Wong explained. Chinese producers must reapply when it expires, giving Beijing a rolling throttle it can tighten or loosen without declaring an outright embargo. For now, there is no quick fix. You can't stockpile because you can't buy anything right now, Smith said. Washington, weary of provoking a cutoff, has so far kept tariffs modest, another reason Wong calls the current state a strategic freeze. He doubts Beijing will honor its pledges for long, seeing rare earths as ongoing leverage in future trade talks with Washington. In the near term, he said, the CCP will push for tariff relief and looser semiconductor controls. Over the longer term, it may simply stall, just as it did during Trump's first term, waiting to see whether post-midterm politics curtail Trump's options. China's promises should not be taken at face value, they must be enforced, monitored, and penalized if broken, Wong said. To keep negotiations from stalling, he said Washington should bind every deadline to automatic penalties, keep fresh sanction packages ready, and coordinate trade, defense, and diplomacy across agencies. The United States, he added, still has leverage of its own, dollar clearing restrictions and potential SWIFT access limits on Chinese banks. Export-import bank insurance caps on China-related projects. Tax breaks for companies that leave China. And even tighter scrutiny of firms such as Huawei, TikTok, and AliCloud. Building an American supply chain. Rare earth magnets are the most critical thing the U.S. needs right now, Smith said. The volume of that business is so much bigger than anything else heavy rare earths. There are two broad magnet classes. Regular temperature magnets rely on the lighter elements neodymium and praseodymium, while high-temperature magnets, vital for cars, aircraft, and weapons, require dysprosium or terbium. MP Materials in California and Lenas in Australia already produce neodymium and praseodymium, which likely spared those elements from Beijing's controls, Smith said. Outside China, however, no company can produce commercial quantities of terbium, dysprosium, or samarium, the key ingredients for high-temperature magnets. Smith's NeoCorp has a fully permitted mine in Nebraska that could produce those elements, but even with financing secured, it would take 3 years to build. Yet that's considered lightning fast by U.S. standards. An S&P Global study this year found the average mine permitting process in the United States takes 29 years, the second longest in the world. Smith said most investors shy away from long-term mining projects and tend to favor quicker tech returns, leaving the federal government as the only likely funding source. If built, NeoCorp could meet the Pentagon's entire demand for dysprosium and terbium, two heavy rare earths over which China now has a near monopoly on processing. He estimates a domestic rare earth industry would create about 4,500 direct jobs, with far more in downstream magnet and auto plants. Washington is trying to shorten that timetable. A March executive order from Trump moved critical mineral projects onto a Fast 41 express lane, and in May, the Interior Department added 10 more mines to the list, trimming years off environmental reviews. The policy shift is already visible in California's Mojave Desert. On April 8, regulators cleared Dateline Resources to advance the long-stalled Coliseum project, poised to become America's second rare earth mine just 6 miles north of Mountain Pass. Domestic output alone will not close the gap, so U.S. producers are also looking offshore. Last month, MP Materials inked a memorandum with Saudi state-owned miner Ma'aden to build a full mine-to-magnet supply chain in the kingdom, an overseas hedge that could funnel processed material back to U.S. or allied factories. Yet overseas deals are no substitute for a strong skills pipeline at home. Education is another hurdle. We still have institutional knowledge in the United States, Smith said, but we need far more of our youth engaged in the technical degrees needed to sustain this capability. A monopoly 50 years in the making. China's dominance did not happen by chance. For 50 years, Smith said, Beijing has poured trillions into geology programs, solvent extraction plants, and magnet factories, while keeping export prices artificially low to bankrupt foreign rivals. The strategy, Secretary of State Marco Rubio told an American Compass Gala on June 3, shows how a nation-state not interested in making money in this field can corner a sector. Once it becomes the sole supplier, you can charge the world whatever you want. They have whole education programs, PhD level, rare earths, and they just continue to innovate and improve because of how seriously they take it, Smith said. The rest of us just kind of sat back and let that happen. He saw the leverage firsthand 15 years ago, when China briefly cut off rare earth shipments to Japan. As chief executive of Molycorp, the only U.S. rare earth miner at the time, Smith tried to build a full mines to magnets chain. But when Chinese exports resumed, prices fell, debt piled up, and without U.S. government backing, Molycorp went bankrupt in 2015. Substitutes help only at the margins, Smith added. Japan, for example, has managed to cut the dysprosium content in its magnets from about 10% to 1%, he said. Meanwhile, automakers such as General Motors and Stellantis are testing iron nitride magnets that use no rare earths at all. Yet the inventor of the modern rare earth magnet, Dr. Masato Sagawa, once told Smith bluntly, "Nothing will ever be able to replace the rare earth permanent magnet in terms of performance and efficiency." Even high-temperature samarium cobalt magnets, indispensable in aerospace, medical, and other high-temperature settings, need terbium, dysprosium, and samarium, elements that today come only from China, Smith noted. Almost total control, except for the ore. Rare earth production typically consists of three main stages: mining the ore, chemically processing it, and manufacturing end products, such as magnets and alloys. China controls more than 90% of the latter two stages. Many nations can mine ore, but most still ship it to China for processing. However, China is not invulnerable. A decade ago, China mined all the ore it processed. Today, roughly half comes from Myanmar, where civil conflict and a recent earthquake have choked that flow. Meanwhile, decades of intensive mining have scarred China's own landscape. It caused a lot of water issues, ground issues, and general contamination, Smith said, prompting tighter regulations and shrinking domestic ore supply. China, even without the stronger environmental regulations, might not be able to produce enough for its own needs, he said. And they're looking for ways to continue to grow their capability to supply these minerals to the world. As global demand soars, Beijing is scouring Africa and other regions for new ore deposits. For the United States and its allies, breaking that grip will take years of investment, streamlined permitting, new financing tools, and a workforce trained for an industry that Beijing has nurtured for half a century, the experts said. Until then, every delay at a Chinese port reverberates through American factory floors. And for now, whether Beijing will honor its latest rare earth promise to Washington remains an open question. Lily Zhou and Gu Xiaohua contributed to this report.